When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100 megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome sales event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome sales event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
What's the most resilient parasite?
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Can build cities, can transform the world, and rewrite all the rules.
That's what I'll be doing every single night.
Which is why...
No!
I have to steal it.
What are you talking about, Willis?
This is Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
It's going to work. It's passable, okay? This isn't terrible.
The best in local, regional, and national sports.
With no hidden agenda.
Primetime with Isaac and Sue on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back to Primetime, hour number two, a Festivus edition on this December the 23rd. We're going to continue airing our grievances and get to our feats of strength for the year 2024 in the world of sports, and also just from the weekend that was in football. Lots of good stuff in the NFL and the college football playoff. And the bowl games, depending on who you ask. But going to take a brief divergence from that to talk a little bit about the upcoming bowl game, and more specifically, the Rose Bowl for the Oregon Ducks. A lot of Oregon fans watching, waiting around 5 o'clock on Saturday night as Ohio State hosted Tennessee in the 8-9 matchup, which, based on seeding, should have been the closest, or one of the closest. It was about a 7-point spread at kickoff, and my goodness, did the Buckeyes come in and lay the absolute wood. It was not a game. Ohio State looked every bit the part that they did when they were dominating people early in the season. They look like one of the best teams, if not the best team, that we saw perform in the college football playoff weekend this first the first round of games, that is. Now they face Oregon. The Ducks already a 2.5-point underdog as the one seed. What do you see in this matchup, Will? I realize that a lot of people, just based on recency bias, are now suddenly very concerned for Oregon when you were starting to feel pretty good about the fact that you could beat them before, you could put up points on their defense. They had lost some people in some key positions on the field. Right. But now that we're seeing them again in the sports books, the line makers are saying, yeah, it's an uphill battle for you guys. What do you think about this matchup for the Ducks?
Well, if I'm a Duck fan, I think that I'm going to have a better game plan than Tennessee had for stopping the passing attack of Ohio State. Ohio State really killed Tennessee by getting one-on-one matchups for Jeremiah Smith, and he just took advantage of him, right? Like, he has that big touchdown to start the game where he's in a one-on-one spot. Will Howard threw up a 50-50 ball, and he goes in, he makes a great play on the ball. That's why some people are saying that Smith is the best wide receiver, not his age, not in the Big Ten, but in the entire country. What they were doing was they're putting G. Scott kind of in the middle, and for those of you who haven't watched a ton of Ohio State, G. Scott is... he almost hits that Hunter Bryant role that UW used to have, where he's listed as a tight end, but he's somewhere in between. He's too big to be a receiver, but he's too small to be a true traditional tight end. Like, you're not really going to have him on the line of scrimmage asking him to take on a defensive end. If you are, that's fine. Expect to lose more of those battles than win, right? And what they were doing is they were using motions to get G. Scott on opposite sides so that he's going up the middle of the field. He's now matched up with a linebacker or with a safety. That's a better matchup for him. He's going to win those matchups. So then to compensate, what Tennessee was doing was they were sliding more of that zone help and keying more on G. Scott after he burned them for the first couple catches. Well, that's going to leave Ibuka one-on-one. That's going to leave Smith one-on-one, and they just took advantage of that, right? I felt like Will Howard came out and basically had his perfect game. The offensive line did a better job. You ran for more yards in this game. You had 156 rushing yards on only 33 carries. So it felt like, hey, maybe the offensive line with that time off, they took a step forward because they had been an issue all season long. And then I also think that maybe myself included, we overvalued Tennessee's defense. Like, you look at what Tennessee was all year, and
they were supposed to be really stout against this Ohio State
team. And they leaned on that defense, especially their front seven. But the more and more you start thinking about it and you look at their schedule, who tested them in the passing game? Like, I think what we've seen this year is that the SEC, usually a conference where there's at least one elite offense that can beat teams on the edges, at least the last 5 to 8 years since Saban made the switch to more of a spread style offense, there wasn't that team this year, right? And even when Tennessee played the best offense that they did, which was Alabama, Milroe was pretty banged up through that game. Like, he missed a lot of throws short, he missed a lot of throws long, and he didn't use his legs as a weapon that he used when they played like LSU or when they played Georgia the first time. So there's a little bit of this Tennessee team. We thought they were a little bit higher defensively, myself included, than they were, and we were kind of downplaying this Ohio State team because the last time we saw them, they lost to a very average Michigan team. So I think now there's a lot of overcorrection and, oh, look at Ohio State. Look at how dominant they are. Look at all the 5 stars they have. The offensive line is finally figuring it out. Oh, Judkins looks a lot more healthy because he's got Henderson, and Henderson looks a lot more healthy because he has Judkins. Will Howard, he added into the +1 run game, where I think that this game is going to be almost a carbon copy of the last time the two teams played. It's going to be a three-point game. It's going to come down to who has the ball last and who executes at the highest level on that drive. Last time they played, Ohio State had a penalty that was a penalty. It was a clear offensive PI, and Will Howard slid instead of fighting for the extra yards or just, frankly, throwing the ball away. If he throws the ball away, it's fine.
And Dan Lanning found a loophole. Let's not forget that.
Which is no longer there anymore.
Nope.
So, to me, nothing has changed, really. I guess maybe I think the Ohio State team is a little bit stronger now because of how the offensive line played, but there's a reason why everyone's excited for this Rose Bowl. It's going to be the best game.
The text line coming in saying here, there are very few teams in the country with more raw individual talent than Oregon, but unfortunately Ohio State is one of them, and on Saturday you saw what they can look like when they're firing on all cylinders. 100% agree with that.
Right.
And a question here, if Jeremiah Smith was in the draft this year, does he go #1 overall? Because I think he might.
No. No, he's a wide receiver. If you're spending that type of capital on a wide receiver,
would he be the #1 receiver taken?
Yes. I would 100% be okay with him being the #1. And you know what? If he could be in the draft also, Ryan Williams would be the #2. So, like, you have these really talented wide receivers that are younger. They're only going to improve more and more and more, right? So I think there's a lot of excitement around this Ohio State team, especially with how you just thumped Tennessee. But if I'm Oregon, I got to feel happy about my D-line. My D-line is stronger than last time we played because Jordan Burch missed that game. He gets hurt on like a Wednesday of practice. Mm-hmm. By the way, you couldn't change your game plan by the time he got hurt. You just had to shuffle players around and hope that they were able to play up to that level. They did. And so you're going to go up against a worse Ohio State offensive line, even if they have improved over the bye week and getting the extra 9 to 10 days, whatever it is, to prepare for you. You still have to like your odds in, hey, our second defensive end dominated their first string left tackle. Now it's going to be the third guy, and it's our #1 defensive end. I have to like that matchup. I have to like Derek Harmon and Caldwell against a second string center. Mm-hmm. That has to make me feel good. And then, again, Will Howard was basically perfect in this game. Take out the interception. He's 24 for 29, 311, and 2 touchdowns. Smith dominated and cooked that Tennessee secondary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he does that to Jabbar Muhammad.
I don't think he does.
Now, is he going to have catches? Is Ibuka going to have catches? Is Henderson going to have a big run? Yes, 100%. You're going to have to find a way to weather that storm.
You got to try to limit explosives, but they'll happen.
Expect the over in this game. It feels like when two talented teams of this level, elite teams, because I would say that both Ohio State and Oregon are elite.
Yeah.
Expect the over to hit in this game. Expect it to be a shootout. It's going to be fun. If you can limit the turnovers and you win the turnover battle as Oregon, I still like your chances. It's going to be a close game. You're going to have to find a way to execute in the red zone better than you did in the last game, and you executed at a fairly high level. So there's a reason why there's a lot of experts right now when they look at this game and they're saying, this is the national championship game. It's because I kind of think it is, and I think we were kind of undervaluing Ohio State, and I'll be the first one to put my hand up. I was among that list.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. We will talk plenty more about this matchup as we get closer to the January 1st Rose Bowl game. That'll include more chatter about it this Friday and Monday when Isaac and Souk are both back in studio. But we need to turn the page here to a little segment we do every Monday called Stock Watch. We'll do that next. You're listening to an SOB edition of Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
I think we can all agree there's been a little bit of oversaturation with Jason Kelce here in the NFL media world.
Ooh, disagree.
But...
hard agree.
I don't not like the guy. We just had a lot of them over the last 16 or so weeks.
Buy or sell. You don't need to see Jason Kelce for a couple of months.
But they've got him in a Santa suit right now. They're in advance of Monday Night Football. They're doing something at one of the houses. Because people who aren't aware, Lambeau Field is like basically in a residential neighborhood. There are people with homes across the street from the stadium. They allow you to park in their front yard, stuff like that. Well, Jason Kelce has gone over sporting a Santa suit to one of these houses to play some cornhole before Monday Night Football. But the best part of this is not Jason Kelce or his suit. It's Scott Van Pelt dressed up as an elf. I could use more of that in my world. That's a great look right there. Speaking of great looks, Schultzy coming to the party today with all the festive gear. We got the lights, we got the surfing Santa, we got the hat. I almost wore my Christmas sweater today, my elf sweater, but I wore it to a Christmas comedy show last night, so I'm sorry, Schultzy, I'm not joining you, but I will turn it over to you for some stock watch.
It's okay, yeah, no Will Ferrell elf costume for me, but some good stuff. Here we go.
The atmosphere was historic.
Yeah.
The game was not. You know, and I'm not going to sit here and say why was Indiana in, but Indiana, with what you guys like to talk about, they have 11 wins. They got to be one of the best teams. Indiana was outclassed in that game. They should not physically, it was not a team that should have been on that field when you consider other teams that could have been there. It's no knock on Indiana. They had a great year. But we've got to move forward with the playoff and hope that the committee does a better job of weighing who the best 12 are versus who's the most deserving, because by golly, they got 11 wins. They didn't beat anybody, but they got 11 wins. That's a bunch of BS. We need to find the best teams. And that's last night. It was incredibly evident just standing on that field and watching the game and the way it played out.
Yeah, that was Kirk Herbstreit talking on Saturday about the Notre Dame-Indiana game, 27-17, the final for Notre Dame, beating Indiana. And making it look just pretty easy throughout the game. A lot of people up in arms over the weekend about it, guys. Buy or sell, Indiana should not have been in the college football playoff.
Sell and sell hard. As I mentioned earlier, I think I even mentioned this on my Twitter feed over the weekend. I was pretty incensed by those Herb Street comments. Indiana did nothing but earn their spot there on merit. They played the entire schedule in front of them. They beat everybody except for another team that's also vying for the national title by a couple possessions at their place. It was not a great game for Indiana. Signetti will admit that. Their players will admit that. But you went on the road to Notre Dame in the dead of winter, and you're playing against another team that probably should have been a top four seed or a top five seed and not a seven seed. So this should not be an indictment on Indiana. This is an indictment more on the way the system is structured, more on the schedules everyone has to play with these diluted super conferences. But it's not Indiana's fault that they went 11-1 with that schedule and then became a 10 seed in the playoff. They earned that spot. If you wanted to see other teams there, those other teams should have won the games that they were supposed to win.
I'm going to sell as well, and I'm going to sell hard because everyone talks about in college football the regular season being the most important thing, and that was a lot of the detraction of the 12-team playoff was, now you're making the regular season not matter. Well, if you really want to make the regular season not matter, put in Ole Miss. Put in Alabama.
Yes.
Put in South Carolina because they have two more losses than Indiana. Did Indiana get lucky by the scheduling? Yes. But you know who else got lucky by the scheduling? Ole freaking Miss. And they didn't take care of business, and Indiana did. And so there's a lot of whining. There's a lot of complaining. There's a lot of trying to change the narratives right now. There's a lot of, the SMU shouldn't have been in either. Stop freaking crying. Control your own destiny.
And the other thing that really bugged me about this is that Kirk Herbstreit was a guy saying what a great story Indiana was all year, including after they got picked as the 10 seed to go to the college football playoff. He did not have the opinion that they shouldn't be here until after he saw that they couldn't hang with Notre Dame. And you know what? In a 12-team playoff, someone pointed this out on the text line earlier, there might only be five or six teams that could win the title, and the rest of those teams might get thumped by all of them. That's a possibility with a field this big, too.
I think there's a world, and I don't think that this is an outlandish or a hot take, that the best three teams in the country, when all is said and done, they're going to be in the Big Ten.
Possible.
There is a world, and I think a pretty strong one, where you're going to look at this and you're going to go, Oregon is one of the best teams in the country, Ohio State is one of the best teams in the country, and Penn State is one of the best teams in the country. Now, to be fair to Georgia, it's not entirely fair to them because their quarterback had an injury issue, right? And it just came down on ESPN. He is officially done for that game. They're not going to say it's for the season. He's done. He's not going to play. You're not going to see him. So, for me, if the best three teams are in the Big Ten, you're just going to have to kind of like throw your hands up. Indiana played in the Big Ten. They beat every team they were supposed to. They thumped pretty much every team they were supposed to. Yep. You got to reward them or else it doesn't matter in the regular season.
And then if they don't get in, then what are we doing this for? What are we doing all those 12 games for? Mm-hmm.
You guys are down 23, I think like 11, 12 minutes to go, three scores behind. You decided to punt there. What went through your mind not going
for it? I mean, I didn't want to punt, but we were doing nothing on offense. And our defense was fighting. You know, that was the only positive, really, that I could draw is our defense was still fighting. Because offense was doing nothing. And I didn't want to go 4th and 10. You know, it's like you're just wishing and hoping. You have nothing to base it on that you can convert 4th and 10 at that point, right? And there's still time if you punt to win the game. So that was the reason why. I didn't want to do it, but I felt like it was the best move.
Google him. That's Kurt Cignetti. He wins, apparently, allegedly. Guys, that was Cignetti talking about the decision with about 10 and a half minutes to go or so in the game, down by three scores to Notre Dame in the first round of the college football playoff, punting the ball away. Indiana, of course, able to score a couple of more times, but they allowed Notre Dame to score as well, making the score, the final score anyways, a 10-point deficit. This is kind of something, guys, that I've always been really, really against coaches doing, and the argument is, you know, when at least in a normal game, when you're down by that much, it looks better, you know, instead of just going for it on fourth and whatever from wherever on the field, you know, to make the score look not as bad or not as big of a blowout, because if you hand it to them on their on your own 10, well, they're going to score easily on you and going to make the score worse. But I just, in this situation, they're near midfield. I don't get it, guys. I'm not even going to ask you specifically about this situation. I kind of want to go more general feel here. Buy or sell that athletic directors and GMs need to wake up and evaluate their coaches more negatively based on the give up factor, which in my definition specifically means punting the ball late in the game when you're down by multiple scores.
As far as athletic directors and GMs, I mean, I think that they're probably already taking a look at how their coaches make big decisions. I just think that in this case, like, I don't get what Cignetti is thinking that the defense is going to accomplish at that. You're too far in the hole to go for it at that point in time. In general, I thought he did a really great job this year. I thought he botched that specific situation. I think that there are situations in football where safety and being risk-averse makes sense. This wasn't one of them. I don't know that he has done enough throughout the season to indicate his should specifically be evaluated. But yeah, I think that when coaches are putting themselves in position to, I guess, diminish their chances of losing a game or diminish their chances of winning a game or late in the affair, you got to look at that. But I'm not sure that this will be anything worth evaluating Cignetti's whole tenure over as he is the coach of the year.
I think that Kurt Cignetti, with what he did this year, earned himself basically a lifetime contract with Indiana. Like, flat out, he's the only person who's ever been able to win there. And if you say that this season by Indiana is anything but a success, no matter what the scheduling is, no matter how that playoff game went, you're just flat out wrong. You're doing it because you don't like Kurt Cignetti. I don't love how he handled that situation, because in my eyes, he knew the game was over. He made that decision to punt there so that he could come back, have the defense get the stop. They start putting in the backups. Now he goes on a big fourth quarter run, and then he can say, hey, look, see, it was within 10 points, right? And I have an issue with that in that spot.
Yeah.
But I also know that, guess what? In 5 years, aside from like true, real college football, like love the brand or Notre Dame fans, people are going to misremember that. And they're going to go, well, hey, it was only a 10-point game.
Yeah.
And so I think there's times where college football coaches, James Franklin does this, frankly. It seems like Lane Kiffin does this as well. They know what the spreads are. They know how to make losses that were more of a butt kicking than they really were look less that way.
Yeah.
And I don't love it, but I also understand that when you go and have a meeting with your athletic director or your GM at the end of the year, if you can say, hey, I made it to the playoffs and I lost to Notre Dame, a team that could potentially be in the college football championship, frankly, I think there's a crazy world where they could win the whole dang thing. I think that that's a nice, easy point of like, hey, I deserve more money, or I need more money in NIL when he goes to boosters, or I need more money for my coordinators or my other coaches, because he can say, hey, look, I only lost by 10 in that game. Like, when you go back and look at it, is that's the closest game. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I think you're right. Yep. Yes.
My math is wrong.
No, you're right.
That is the closest game. And there will be a point in time, now it'll be 3-4 years down the road, where a decent chunk of society forgets that.
And I just don't know how much that matters. Like, if you're Cignetti, why not throw the, not, I mean, maybe literal and figurative Hail Mary at that point. If you lose by 21, you lose by 21. But at least you went out swinging, as opposed to, well, we saved face for what? You didn't advance.
I don't disagree with you.
Yeah, I hate guys saving face. I think we've, I don't know, I could do one more, but I think we're already up against it, Buck.
Sure. Let's, that's an abridged version of Stockwatch, brought to you every week by Goldberg and Jones, divorce for men right here in Portland. You can reach them at 1-800-DIVORCE. That's 1-800-DIVORCE. We got to get to our In the News section of the program coming up next. Your regular news contributors not here, but we still have a bomb cyclone, an owl rescue, and where Portland ranks in the best cities for Christmas to get to. It's all coming up in the News, 1080 The Fan. I love Carol of the Bells. Is this Carol of the Bells? Ring Christmas Bells. Is it close to Carol of the Bells? It feels like it's close to Carol of the Bells.
Is this from The Office episode?
Oh, I don't know that it's from there. The Office may have used it.
They used like a hard rock one.
Oh, yeah. Well, and possibly. I thought that was like...
Is that this?
This is Ray Conniff. I think the Carol the Bells, like, that's like Man, I'm Steamroller, David Foster.
It sounds very similar, but that's neither here nor there. It is Monday. It is December 23rd, and it is time for In the News. Your regular news contributors already way on break. Good thing you have us as news contributors here for you. Start things off. It is Festivus, of course, as pronounced by the great, or I guess not pronounced, what he's proclaimed by the great sitcom Seinfeld. Today to air our grievances and celebrate feats of strength. We've already aired many a grievance. We will continue to celebrate feats of strength a little bit later. It's also National Christmas Movie Marathon Day. Did either of you guys watch any Christmas movies since the last time we talked on Thursday?
No, I've not watched any movies at all.
Schultz, any others in the rotation?
Multiple. We got Elf in there a couple more times. Put the Santa Claus on with Tim Allen. And there's really good one called The Christmas Train. It's a Hallmark one, but okay. It's got Dermot Mulroney. And okay. Then Kimberly Williams-Paisley in it, the chick from Father of the Bride.
Oh,
the
okay.
Daughter.
Sure.
Okay, I have a question.
One of my staples.
I have a question now. I have not watched any Christmas movies this year.
Okay.
However, at the gym, when I'm on the treadmill getting my cardio on, my hot girl walk going.
Sure.
The Hallmark Channel has been a mainstay. Not that I've turned it on, but they leave it on. Does that count as watching a Christmas movie if I read the closed captions?
Kind of. I think it counts as of you like catching a little bit of Christmas movie. Does it count as you watching an NBA game if it's on and you see somebody get a couple buckets even though you didn't really go out of your way to watch it?
I've watched more Hallmark Christmas movies than I've watched NBA games this year, and it's all been at the gym while I'm walking. Also, the lady from Boy Meets World, or no, not Boy Meets World. What's the other stupid one? From
don't
that
know.
Era.
Saved by the Bell.
No. It's like the Wonder Years. Wonder Years.
Yes.
Wonder Years.
Yes.
The Wonder okay. Years. She's on like all the Hallmark Christmas movies.
She is.
She's in like eight of them.
No. So apparently one of the big ones this year was the one that was basically the Hallmark movie based off of the romance of Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. They did like a...
Yes.
Where they like replaced the actual... But the whole idea was like... Yeah. Midwestern football star meets rock star,
nine-time MVP,
and there's got to be a job out there. I'll moonlight and do it. I am so tired of there being movies and TV shows that just can't explain the little reasonable sports facts without getting them completely wrong. The protagonist in this film, the Travis Kelce, so to speak, was a nine-time NFL MVP that couldn't find love. Are no nine-time MVPs, you idiots. Just say it's three. Whatever. Like,
they brought people in from the Chiefs to help with this movie. I am shocked that did not happen.
Yeah. So, you know, that again, neither here nor there. I caught Christmas Vacation on Saturday night. I watched Klaus last night. Klaus is a fun animated one with Jason Schwartzman. He's a postman who gets banished to like the worst place in the world by his dad, who thinks he's bad at being the postmaster general.
Smearinsburg. What a good Netflix movie.
And then basically he's like, hey, I can get my way off this island if I get all the kids to write letters to Santa because it'll get my numbers up. And then he finds joy in Christmas spirit. And
it's
the
a Santa
it's
origin
wonderful.
Story. It's yeah. really nice.
How many Santa origin stories are there? There's a lot of them. Also, it was Winnie Cooper, by the way. Winnie Cooper.
Yeah, Danica McKellar.
Yeah,
the actress that plays her. She's gorgeous.
I had to go and find it. Also, are you going to watch The Rock's Christmas movie?
Yes.
No.
I heard that was really good, actually.
Really?
The one on Prime, right? With him and Channing Tatum?
Yeah. Where the... No, Channing Tatum's not in it.
No, sorry, but it is on Amazon Prime.
Captain
right?
America.
I thought, yes, Chris Evans, thank you. Yeah. I thought that got really good reviews, so I heard. So
it may have. I don't care what anybody reviews a Rock movie as. I have seen him in enough things. I think he's a terrible actor. I don't ever need to watch one of his films or television shows again. There were people who loved Ballers. It was terrible. Maybe a good concept. He was horrible.
He's not acting.
I was going to say,
I don't think he's a bad
just
actor.
There.
He's himself. He never changes
from
himself.
I like him better as himself than fake himself.
You know
which
what?
Is...
To that point, that is like half of the actors that we watch, and I can't stand it. You know what? Why can't you, Ryan Buckley, you, Will Ortner, go find somebody to pay you millions of dollars per week to just be yourself, and we'll tape it for you, and you can write storylines around these little fake things that you're doing in your life.
Well, that's simple. I am not as attractive as The Rock, and I will be the first one to tell you.
Don't sell yourself short. You've lost more weight than he has in the last year.
Yeah, but he look, he looked better than me, and I'm not going to deny that fact. The other thing, too, I think I'm with you on The Rock's, like, movies. Well, some of them. I still love Fast Five. I think I'm with you on, like, newer Rock movies. I don't need to see Skyscraper. The Rock movies are all the same movies.
Yeah.
That being said, whenever, like, he goes out and starts doing WWE stuff,
yeah,
I get jacked up.
That's his wheelhouse.
He is awesome in wrestling, and, like, his new little walkout thing, super sick.
Well, we have a bomb cyclone coming to the Pacific Northwest on the Oregon-Washington coastline. It's coming in tonight. They're saying that about 700 miles offshore, this storm is a-brewing. It's going to bring powerful winds to the Oregon and Washington coast on Monday evening. It is classified as a bomb cyclone, rapidly intensifying with a pressure drop of at least 28 or 24 millibars in 24 hours. What does your barometer tell you about that, Will?
What makes it a bomb cyclone? How does it get there?
Oh, now you're going to ask me to define the term. It says...
Can you give me a country of origin, please?
Yeah, can I get the word's etymology, please? No, it says that the... What we're going to get out of it is 35 to 45 mile an hour winds. Okay. Many locations across the coastline, wind gusts up to 50 to 60 miles per hour for some isolated coastal locations.
Will Glenn Powell be driving his pickup truck and trying to get readings from it?
I hope so. He's hot.
Dude, he's number one right now.
He's tasty. Tasty looking dude.
No, that's about all I got for you on the bomb and cyclone.
Glad I said that with music under me. That will not be a drop. It will not.
That made me really uncomfortable. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, come on. You're all thinking it out there. You look at that guy and you're like, ugh, wish I were him.
Yes, but I would not call it.
But why
man
do you
tasty.
Wish you were him? Because he's
good
tasty
looking
as hell.
We use different words. We use different words.
Language is important, right?
Schultzy, have you heard that there's a barista strike afoot nationwide, and it's affecting our region right here?
I'm already paying like $10 a beverage. Do I not like tip enough on top of that? What the hell's going on?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, you are a Dutch Bros bro, so it does not affect you, but there is a nationwide Starbucks barista strike, and it includes the Beaverton Starbucks on Southwest Beaverton Hillsdale Highway. Their walkout was set to begin at noon today and continue through Christmas Eve. There were other locations doing it in Boston, Dallas, Fort Worth, and this is essentially based on the fact that the baristas unionized. They thought they deserved better pay, better working conditions, better benefits, stuff like that. And Starbucks is like, yeah, cool, that sounds pretty good. We'll meet with your labor negotiations people. We'll meet with your union. And they had 9 different meetings over about 20 days, and they agreed to framework of a lot of things that we're going to prove for everyone. And then Starbucks just kind of backtracked. They just were like, I think we're good here.
Never mind.
Now, on one hand, it sounds like these people anybody who works over 20 hours a week gets decent pay, decent benefits, and is relatively well taken care of. They can even be eligible for college tuition, paid family leave. So it may just be a case of, hey, there's enough of us. If we bitch loud enough, we can get more of what we want. But also, it seemed like some bad faith from the Starbucks Corporation as well. Hard to know.
I'm going to have to ask. I wonder if, is Dutch Bros going to come in, or like a BlackRock? Are they going to start trying to poach? Are they going to go for like some scabs here? I'm going to have to get some industry insiders.
I think that Starbucks, unfortunately, this is just the observations of my wife and I, but they're kind of already dealing with like the people that Dutch doesn't hire.
Yeah.
There's a Dutch Brothers right across from the Starbucks in Wilsonville that I go to, and it is inherently obvious that all the hots were hired by Dutch and all of the knots were hired by Starbucks. It's like, oh, this is the world that we're in now. Okay, so Starbucks has moved down the train just a little bit.
Well, be sure to check the hours and updated news if you plan on getting a Starbucks today or tomorrow. Make sure your nearest location is actually open and operating. We've got more in the news coming up next. Need to get to where Portland ranks among the best Christmas cities nationally. Does it even belong on the list? Schultzy and Ordner say no. I'll tell you where it lands, though. That's coming up next. Primetime, 1080 The Fan. This is the Charlie Brown one. So this is from?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, Vince Guaraldi, Charlie Brown Christmas. Christmas Time is Here vocal version.
Oh, that's Peanuts.
I like the, I want to say it's called Linus and Lucy, but it's the one where they just hammer away on the piano. The I love that one.
Yeah, and actually, every once in a while, the current day composer, he's getting up there himself, David Benoit, comes to Oregon to do a little bit of a Christmas show. He does all the Peanuts music, or he has for the last, like, 30 years, I believe. So it's actually a really fun concert.
Schultzy, deep knowledge. The more you know.
Trying to help.
Let's get back to In the News. Just one more story for you before we turn the page into the hot, very hot, 5 at 5. I have the top Christmas cities in the U.S. in the year 2024. Now, this comes to us from Wallet Hub, as many of these stories do. Ooh. It's based on 28 key indicators, including traditions, shopping, and costs. So if you want to make Christmas a memorable one without breaking the bank, check out this list of most Christmas-friendly cities in the U.S.
Nice. I still have to shop.
Do you? Jeez. That seems like a problem on the eve of the evening of the 23rd.
It's Christmas Eve. I've got time.
It's all right. My last two Christmas presents showed up via Amazon last night, so I'm not too far ahead of you.
I'm a day of.
So, where would you guys both said before you didn't believe that Portland would necessarily belong on this list. Is that correct?
No, I would not. I don't believe it deserves to be on the list. And the only reason it would be on the list is if their strength of schedule wasn't very strong. Like, if they got some help with the schedule this year, then maybe they could sneak in, like in Indiana. But
no, you'd be better going up to Timberline Lodge for Christmas than you would be in Portland, frankly.
14th nationally.
No.
Behind.
Are they only ranking big cities?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
So hold on. Let me see if it
strength of schedule.
If it has a,
because like 11 Worth is better.
Okay. This is a list of the 100 biggest cities in the U.S.
Yeah. Okay. Because like 11 Worth would be 1,000 times better than Portland.
But it's not in the top 100 biggest.
Yeah. No, it's nowhere near. Because no offense to Portland, Leavenworth, they literally designed their entire town.
Not the
for
best
Christmas.
Small Christmas towns. The best Christmas cities.
Gotcha.
So
gotcha.
Portland is
schedule merchant
behind 13 Birmingham, Alabama, and just ahead of 15 Honolulu, Hawaii.
What? See, I'm not really for the tropical.
I disagree with you, Wallet Hub.
Tropical Christmases are nice, but I don't think they can be considered the top Christmases.
Well, so let me tell you where how Portland ranks in each of these categories. In traditions and fun, they rank 17th out of 100. In observance rank, 70th. We don't observe many of the observances, clearly. Generosity rank, 11th. A shopping rank of 12th. That seems surprising, considering how much shopping has gone away, frankly, for Portland. And then on cost rank, they are 50th. Now, also of note, in the Pacific Northwest, coming in all the way at number 3 nationally, Seattle, Washington.
I have looked up this list, and I have the list in front of me, and I'm telling you right now, I'm calling shenanigans. I do not believe in Wallet Hub. They are not a good hub that you should visit. If they're a sponsor, then they're great.
I do question how you, just by the money spent or the pricing, you can gather whether or not that, like, I guess the word good is kind of a different, like, meaning here as far as what a good Christmas means.
Well, I'll tell you right now, Birmingham, Alabama has no shot at getting me there on Christmas. And they're only so high because their observance rank is number 1. So I'm assuming that means that everyone goes to church?
Yeah, they have.
Or do they have a big tree that they all can see? Like,
no. So I think observance rank, if you have a good observance rank, you're ranked like 1, you probably do a lot of like, there's stuff around the city. Jesus is the reason for the season. You're observing people's religions and their cultures and their whatever. I mean, I think maybe.
We do a tree lighting this year in Portland. I've been to the Pioneer Square one in the past, but I don't.
I'll just tell you right now, not to spoil the list, but the number 2 city is Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
That's right.
I'm not going to freaking Pittsburgh.
Why not?
Isn't
that
it a
doesn't
snowy
really
there?
Feel could be Thanksgiving-y lovely to me. Number 4 is Las Vegas. Now, I'm fine with Las Vegas. Las Vegas, I understand.
See,
that one.
Pittsburgh seems more Christmassy to me than Las Vegas does.
Disagree, because like you can get a little bit of like the warmth. If it's like why I think Honolulu should be higher. And I get Schultz's point of it, of like, hey, you know, tropical Christmas is not the greatest thing ever. As someone from a cold weather spot that used to go down to California and go down to basically LA every single year, like, I'm all about the warm Christmas. Give me my special vacation time in the warm. I can go to Vegas. Here's the beauty of Christmas in Vegas, and maybe this is just me being a heathen. But there's something for everyone. If you want to go and gamble,
you can go to church in Vegas.
You can go. There's plenty. I heard Elvis runs one of them. So there are all these different things that you could do in Vegas. That sounds a lot better than going to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Well, what am I going to do? Watch a Steelers game?
I'm sure it's a little bit snowier.
Yeah, probably.
Cool thing about Vegas is it's already the City of Lights and the decorations there throughout the year. I've never been to Vegas during Christmas, but I've seen, you know, social media clips of other people's trips, and it does look absolutely beautiful.
I have been right. Was it before or after? I think I went right before Christmas. I went to an Oregon BYU Las Vegas Bowl.
Hell yeah.
And I want to say it was played on like the 22nd or the 19th or something like that. And let me tell you, Vegas itself, pretty dead. But what I can also tell you is that I was young enough right out of college that I don't really remember the Christmas decor as much as I remember the debauchery.
You really shouldn't if you're going to Vegas in like fresh out of college. This is a great text here by Deal. Birmingham, Alabama. Christmas, it just means more.
Yes. See, that's exactly right.
See,
they get it.
But here's the issue. When you think of like Christmas and you think of Christmas movies and a big city, what's the big city you think of? It's New York.
Yeah.
It's ranked 10th.
Mm.
There is no world where Orlando, Florida, and St. Louis, Missouri is ranked higher than New York City.
Yeah, I agree with Will. This list is weird.
It's odd. But again, these are Wallet Hub's rankings. They don't have to be yours.
Wallet Hub is clearly falling down my rankings of websites with the name Hub in it.
Well, let's pivot off of this then, and we don't need to get too much further down the city rankings road. Because what we have coming up is a very hot 5 at 5 before we get back to our Festivus special. We need to get to our Feats of Strength, and we'll be doing that following the hot 5 at 5. That's coming up next, right here on 1080 The Fan.